Texas, America, the world. Mark Ancoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined this morning by Greg Felton, the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. And as an example of just how true the title of Greg's book is, take a look this morning at Jim Loeb's piece at antiwar.com entitled Cheney Raises the Rhetoric Against Iran. Cheney's raising of rhetoric occurred in a major policy address to the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, WINEP, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. And lo and behold, as you go down the page in terms of Mr. Loeb's essay, you discover a very, very interesting couple of paragraphs. The forum chosen by Cheney to deliver his speech was in many ways as significant as its timing and context, says Jim Loeb. The Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a generally hawkish think tank, was founded some 20 years ago by the research director of the highly influential lobby, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, and is funded by many of the same donors. AIPAC, in turn, has led a high-powered effort to persuade Congress to impose tough new sanctions against Iran and foreign companies that do business with it, and more recently to have Tehran's Revolutionary Guard declared a quote-unquote terrorist organization. Greg Felton, how are you in Canada today, my friend?
I'm doing well, Mark. Yourself?
Very good. Where do you want to take the conversation in these last 60 minutes?
Well, let's pick up on Jim Loeb's piece first. He's quite okay. Right. WINEP is little more than an offshoot of AIPAC, and one of the head people of that is Dennis Ross, who, as you remember, was one of Bill Clinton's advisors or interlocutors at the so-called Oslo agreements. And Dennis Ross is one of the people who helped sabotage that agreement, and he's the person who's ahead of it. And yet, I have a chapter in my book called Invasion of the Policy Snatchers, where I talk about groups like WINEP and the AEI, American Enterprise Institute, and the Center for Security Policy, all of whom serve as a Zionist parallel government. So when Cheney goes to speak to WINEP, he's really speaking to his bosses. He's not speaking to the American public or the United States. What WINEP does is it serves Israel. And we have this whole scheme of pro-Israel businesses and lobby groups that have really done a number on the United States. And these all started to proliferate like mushrooms after Ronald Reagan took over as president. Matter of fact, the AEI was little more than a common pro-business lobby group. But about 1955, it changed leadership, and a man named Christopher DeMuth came in. And, well, you had a scenario where it turned into a hardline pro-Reaganaut neocon pressure group. And now it's a farm team for the government, for the Bush junta. You have Robert Bork, Michael Ledeen, John Bolton, every odious, bigoted, right-wing thug that you could think of, at some point or another, probably walked through the AEI. And it's this is an example of just who really runs the country when you have someone like Cheney talking to WINEP and giving him informed, specific rhetoric about what he plans to do. That's who he has to account to. It's not the American public.
Truer words were never spoken, Greg. We'll be back with Greg Felton, the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America, when Mark Dankoff's America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear, and here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new, alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com, or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our very special guest today is Greg Felton, the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. Greg hooks up with us live from Vancouver this morning. Greg, as we continue to unfold some stories this a.m., I'm again struck by the irony of the fact that between watching the Fox News Republican presidential debates last night and then reading some of this material that we've been making reference to in the air this morning, the American right has, I mean, I've constantly emphasized this on this show, and yet it comes back to me again. I never cease to be amazed by just what a tumultuous, gargantuan shift we have had in terms of the American right in the last 50 years. I mean, listening to these guys last night, with the exception of Ron Paul, you would have the impression that the American right historically supported constant foreign interventionism abroad, borrowing billions of dollars from foreign banks to support wars for empire in the Middle East and elsewhere, There very little was said last night by three-fourths of these candidates in regard to a $9 trillion national debt. None of them were really addressing the issues related to this whole creation of a federal police state, especially in the last 5 or 6 years with the Patriot Acts and the Military Commissions Act and the National Security Agency spying program and so forth. I mean, it really does seem to me that what you have is a circumstance where what used to be a movement that emphasized individual liberty and extreme suspicion of interventionist government at home and abroad has now largely become, if I can venture this rather controversial thought, a movement that has a lot in common with neo-fascism, frankly.
Well, it is neo-fascist. That's precisely what it is. I mean, nothing is farther from the Republican mentality than foreign interventionism. I mean, the Republicans have traditionally been more isolationist, almost autarkic in their economic outlook. I mean, Pat Buchanan is probably the most typical example of what traditional Republicans believed during up until, say, like the Eisenhower Republicans. Although Eisenhower wasn't rapidly as religious as Buchanan, I mean, the idea of foreign intervention, about spending money, spending yourself into oblivion to fight unnecessary, especially unnecessary foreign wars, that has been traditionally the Democrats' bailiwick. I mean, the Democrats were usually thought of as the party of war. They're the ones who got involved in World War II. They're the ones who got us into Korea. They're the ones who got us into Vietnam. The Republicans didn't. The Republicans were more stay at home, let's look after ourselves, don't get involved in other people's businesses. Well, as you quite rightly said, that particular mentality has gone out the window. There's been a holus bolus slide into aggressive imperial overreach. And that has been predominantly seen during the misrule of George W. Bush. But as I show in my book, it started with Ronald Reagan. And it got really, for the Republicans at least, it got to be full-blown with respect to the Middle East. And during Reagan's time, we can see a steady buildup of pro-Israel influence within the government. And this is neo-fascist. It is fascist literally in every sense of the word. The 14 points that Professor Lawrence W. Britt showed about what constitutes a fascist state are everywhere evident in the United States. And the United States does not exist. The United States is a shell of a company. It's a shallow, pathetic excuse for a republic. And nobody who's running for office has the courage to stand up to the Israel lobby. They bow and scrape and supplicate themselves like so many people coming to see the godfather of a crime organization. They're afraid to cross the godfather. And that's what you have now in the United States, an embarrassment of a country.
Well, you were telling me last night, Greg, about some developments up in Canada that suggest that some of these problems are being repristinated up there. What's transpiring in the Canadian political scene that will shed some light at the same time on what's happening in the American?
Up here we have essentially a two-party system between what is usually called the Conservative Party and the Liberals. Now, we have a third, another party. We have the New Democratic Party, which is a left-of-center, centrist party. But it's perennially a third-place party, and by itself, it'll never form government because it can never attract a large enough voter base. So we end up with either a majority or minority government based on the Liberals or the so-called Conservatives. Now, we haven't had a Conservative government for ages. We've had populists that have infiltrated the Conservative Party. And this began in the late 1990s with the rise of the Reform Party, led by Preston Manning and a bunch of Christian wackos from Alberta and British Columbia who tried to theocratize our political system. And these people are the ones who sort of winnowed their way into the party because of the great betrayal of Peter MacKay, who was head of the Progressive Conservative Party during the 1990s. He allowed... was probably toward the, I forget exactly when it was, probably the early 2000s, that he sold out and allowed the Progressive Conservative Party to merge with the Reform Party, and essentially allowed the enemy into the fort. And now the party has been completely swallowed up by Christian radicals and pro-Israel apologists. But the problem for Canada is that during the last few years of the last Liberal government, we saw a takeover of the Liberal Party, too, to a far greater degree than we probably could have imagined. I mean, we had Paul Martin was the Prime Minister, and he was basically bowing and scraping to the Israel lobby because I think he was definitely afraid of crossing it. Erwin Kotler, who was Justice Minister, was actively sabotaging policy for Israel, doing Israel's bidding in the cabinet. And I wrote several columns about Erwin Kotler as essentially a treasonous fifth column element for Israel. So right now we have a problem that for Canadians, you have a choice of having a government right now which is run by intellectually incompetent Christian dilettantes, or you have a party led by probably better educated professional people, but who are also just as keen to serve the interests of Israel over the national interests of Canada. We have a group called the Liberal Parliamentarians for Israel, which essentially is a pressure group within the party that helps sabotage Canada's traditional down the middle of the road policy toward Palestine into abject subservience for Israel. And the Canadian public was appalled at this. Most Canadians are not pro-Israeli. Most Canadians have a sense of a moral sense, and they want Canada to be seen as a fair and just country. But that is no longer possible. So right now, Canadians are facing a possible election sometime in the near future to unseat Stephen Harper's minority government. He's of the Harper Party. I cannot call him conservative because he generally is not conservative. And it's the Liberal Party, the party that might replace him, is led by a man named Stéphane Dion, a French-speaking professor from Quebec who is probably a decent guy, but who has thoroughly sold out to the Israel lobby. He has appointed, Kotler, as his human rights advisor, which is like having Heinrich Himmler as your human rights advisor. He has Bob Rae, a former NDP premier of Ontario who has since changed parties, but who is solidly in the pro-Israel camp. His wife is a Zionist Jew, and that makes Bob Rae a Zionist as well. And so Bob Rae is making all these, giving advice to Stéphane Dion, and we have Dion unwilling to stand up to think for himself. And the great irony is that during the leadership campaign to select a new leader after Paul Martin stepped down, mercifully, it was the lobby that went after Stéphane Dion. The lobby owes nothing to Dion. Dion was put into power by people who wanted to stop the lobby's continued domination of the Liberal Party. They wanted an independent Canadian leader of the party. So why he's bowing and scraping to the lobby is anybody's guess. And for Canadians, the prospect of another election is horrific. We would have a choice between Stephen Harper's Christian Looney Tunes, who sell out to Israel America at every available opportunity, or we have the Liberal Party, which is just shot full of Zionists that would also perpetuate the pro-Israel aggressiveness that Stephen Harper has started. And we have the NDP in party that is too stupid to see any real difference between Harper and the Liberals. And I had a discussion with one of the MPs from the NDP not too long ago. He was a local fellow here in British Columbia. I met him at a function. And he's a nice fellow, smart, intelligent, but he hasn't got the political smarts. And the NDP actually brought down the Liberal government at the worst possible time, and inasmuch as the Martin government that was brought down was corrupt, incompetent, and just bloody awful. It was the one that started this this strategic partnership program. I mean, the NDP should not have brought down the government when it did, and the NDP can't really see past its own self-interest. But Canadians are pretty well screwed if there's another election pretty soon. terrible.
It sounds like the United States in the fall of 2008. We'll be back with Greg Felton. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Greg Felton of Vancouver, the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. Greg, I see that there's a report that CNN has out there this morning indicating that Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met Sunday with a top U.S. military commander in Iraq to voice his outrage over the reported deaths of Iraqi civilians during a Sunday morning military raid in Baghdad's Sadr City. And reading through this account, we see a situation here, of course, where there are reports that as many as 15 civilians were killed, all men, and 52 other civilians were wounded, including women and children, in an operation that coalition forces say involved the targeting of a man that they said was a leader in an Iranian-funded kidnapping operation. The U.S. military spokeswoman, Sergeant Nicole Dykstra, told CNN The target was, quote, neither apprehended nor killed. And yet apparently there were all kinds of civilians that were killed and wounded in the situation. And now, of course, the Iraqi Prime Minister al-Maliki is expressing his, using CNN's words here, his outrage over the reported deaths of these Iraqi civilians in his conversations with Petraeus. Have we really reached a point in this situation in Iraq where even the central government there is turning against the United States? I mean, we have this issue now of the Turks and the Kurds and the PKK. We've got the issue of Iran in this situation. You've got some of the Sunni and Shiite tensions that continue to be a factor. Now the American-backed central government is apparently having some real serious problems with what the occupation forces are doing. Where is all of this headed, in your judgment?
Well, I think we need to clarify that al-Maliki was never really pro-American. I mean, America doesn't have allies. It has dependencies, and it has enemies.
Yes.
In Iraq, people got into power not because they were pro-American, but because they're willing to sell out to the Americans. They're willing to collaborate with them.
Right.
Once in power, they were there to do is America's bidding, but the problem is, even though they were there for America's bidding, they weren't the real government. They were just taking orders from Washington to make sure Washington's, and by Washington I mean Israel's, objectives were looked after. So when you have a calamity such as happened in Sadr City with all these Iraqis being killed, you have to look at it from the American point of view, such that they don't really give a damn what happens to Iraqis. If they think that one person in a group of people might be, and I stress the word might be, a terrorist or somebody who harbors less than perfect love for America, they will go in with guns blazing and they will commit all sorts of disaster and atrocity just to get this person. And they'll rationalize, we were going after somebody. But that's like taking a bazooka and several armored personnel carriers into downtown San Antonio just because you've got a bank robber that might have run around the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way the Americans look at it. I mean, they don't care what happens to Iraqis. They've never cared what happens to Iraqis. If an Iraqi dies, it's simply one more dead Arab that the world could care less about. And so when a disaster like this happens and Maliki is upset that Americans aren't behaving, properly, they aren't taking care of the Arabs, or they're not taking care not to kill Arabs, he's missing the point. I mean, the Americans aren't there to protect Iraq. America is there to kill Arabs and to sabotage the Iraqi economy, such that it ends up in a permanently dependent state, and that is permanently dependent on the United States. And so what Maliki, if he had any guts, he would order the entire U.S. military out and find some way to work out with his enemies a coalition government. Because no leader who is dependent on a foreign occupying force is long for this world. And I don't know how long it's going to be before someone takes a shot at Maliki, because he has no future if he's going to continue to be propped up by a country that has no regard for his own people. What we saw today in Iraq, or yesterday in Iraq, is simply symptomatic of the general mentality of the United States. So this is just something we're going to have to see a lot more of, and it depends how long the Iranians are going to stand for. Now, you're quite right. This is interesting to see that the Iraqi government is standing up and getting publicly angry at the United States. And now we know Blackwater is being moved out of the country because it is essentially a private SS group that sort of runs riot and is unaccountable to anyone. But this is just further sign that the United States policy in Iraq is failing. It was never I would say failing, but it's having effects that are so deleterious to the well-being of Iraq that it's going to bring about its own demise.
Well, one of the things, Greg, that strikes me in all of these reports, even the ones that I look at in the alternative press, is that we haven't seen any estimations recently on the total number of insurgents in that country. I wanted to ask you about that when we come back, as well as to discuss a couple of other things that you and I chatted about on the phone last evening. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for Greg Felton. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials. Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Greg Felton hooks up with us today from Canada. Greg is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. Greg, before we move on to a couple of the other questions that you and I chatted about on the phone last night, I'm reminded of something that is a real curiosity to me. I remember in 2003, hearing the official estimate of CENTCOM that there were 5,000 insurgents in Iraq. Now, a year later, I heard them say that, well, we now think there are 20,000 insurgents in Iraq, which made me think, well, either CENTCOM totally blew the original estimate, or American policy in Iraq has produced four times as many insurgents as existed the year before. I have since seen no figures emanating from anyone in regard to how many insurgents are actually believed to exist in that country. Have you seen any figures on this?
No, I haven't. And perhaps one of the reasons is that there is no real way to define who is an insurgent. I mean, there's one thing about Iraq that is very similar to Vietnam, and that is the United States did not understand its enemy and did not recognize its enemy. I mean, the United States and Vietnam essentially treated every South Vietnamese as a potential enemy. But the Viet Cong did not march in formation, did not wear uniforms, it did not proclaim its banners openly. It was a guerrilla force. And if you're an American occupier in Iraq, and you look at some piece of bombed out Baghdad, and you're just patrolling there, and you're seeing people go about their business, you have no way to know who is or is not an insurgent. And so what we have now is the United States is caught in a position that it doesn't even know who the enemy is. And we have, again, a 6-6 scenario in which Americans will kill anybody they think might possibly, theoretically, in the most bizarre scenario, might be an insurgent. But to be an insurgent in Iraq these days is pretty much to be a liberator, a rebel. Because the people who are fighting the Maliki government are closer to the minds and the spirit of the Iraqi people than the Americans are. And so Americans really can't say X so-and-so is an insurgent unless they decide, oh, we're going to decide beforehand that this person is an insurgent and we're going to go after him and do whatever to him we feel we have to. An insurgent is pretty much an arbitrary distinction. Because there's no way to say who is or is not working, you know, against America's interests or Israel's interests. So you end up with a very perverted and very disturbing mentality. Americans are in Iraq and they don't know who to kill. They don't know who is the enemy. They have no idea. And this is exactly what happened in Vietnam. Americans were defeated because they could not see the enemy. The enemy defeated America because America had no policy. It had no political solution to the problem of a broken, fractured country. It started killing, and killing for its own sake became its own justification for existence. And so if you look at who's fighting the United States, you're probably finding more and more people are joining the ranks of the disaffected, of the rebels. And the United States is going to find itself fighting greater and greater numbers. Now, I suspect the United States isn't reporting figures, A, because they don't know, but what little third-rate intelligence they do have tells them the numbers are increasing. And the last thing you want to tell your people is that this war that we started for no good reason is costing us more and more lives, and we're making matters worse by trying to kill the people that should be helping us stabilize the country. And so this is the preferred scenario that the United States faces now. And the reason you haven't seen figures is kind of like the body bags coming out of Vietnam. I mean, the body bags stopped being reported after a while. And you don't want to see body bags, especially if those body bags refer to the moribund state of American policy.
Yes, you were talking with me last night, Greg, about a book that has been published that is a most curious thing. You will, I guess, be in a position of just being able to discuss this on a limited basis right now on the air. But this book publishing situation has much wider implications. You want to discuss that a little bit this morning?
Okay, I can do a little bit. I mean, I've only just read some reviews of this book. I haven't had a chance to look at it myself yet. But I don't think that in any way inhibits my ability to speak of it, because I've seen interviews with the author, and what she has to say is historically monstrous. To give some background, one of the worst war crimes in World War II was the murder of about 600,000 Hungarian Jews by the Nazis. And one of the people who made this possible was a Jew by the name of Rudolf Kastner, or Rezu Kastner in Hungarian. And Rezu Kastner betrayed whole groups of Jews to the Nazis so that he could get his own friends and family and a few other elite Jews out of the country. It was called Kastner's Train. And if you know anything about World War II history, the Zionists, the Jewish agency in Germany, was an active collaborator with the Nazis for much of the 1930s. It was the principle upon which the transfer agreement was made, and that was the transfer of Jewish wealth to the Hitler regime so that it could survive the first tenuous years of its existence, because, frankly, the Hitler's regime probably should not have survived more than a few years because of the decrepit state of the Nazi economy, the German economy at the time. At any rate, Kastner openly collaborated with a man named Becker, who was a Nazi involved with the deportation of Jews at the time. He was an SS officer. And because of Kastner's collaboration and role in the deaths of all these hundreds of thousands of Jews, a man named Malkiel Grinwald, an elderly man, brought a charge of collaboration against Kastner in Israel in 1954. Now, Kastner didn't do anything about it. By this time, Kastner was a very prominent political figure in the Mapai party in Israel. He was a big shot, a very conspicuously important person. But the problem here was that the Attorney General at the time, Chaim Cohen, had to force Kastner to sue Grinwald for libel. Now, you've got to ask yourself, why somebody had to be forced to sue for libel is an interesting point. Because if someone had libeled me, and I have been libeled, but I can't really be bothered right now to fight some of the pettier people out there like Ezra Levant. But the point is, you had Kastner forced to go to court to defend himself. And the case became the Grinwald case, but it became nicknamed the Kastner trial. And the trial was held before a single judge, Benjamin Halevi, and he heard the evidence against Kastner, and he heard the charge about Grinwald. And he essentially came to the conclusion that Grinwald was correct. And he found that Kastner was a willing and enthusiastic collaborator with the Nazis. And here's from page 11 of the decision of the Attorney General versus Grinwald. I'll read a short piece here for you. The benefit that Kastner gained from the contract of May 2, 1944 with the Nazis was the rescue of the camp of prominent Jews. And the price that he had to pay for this was a complete surrender of any attempts at real rescue steps benefiting the camp of the people, the Jews in general. The price the Nazis paid for this was to waive the extermination of the camp of prominence. With this contract to save the prominent Jews, the head of the Aid and Rescue Committee, that was Kastner, made a concession with the exterminator. In return for the rescue of the prominent Jews, Kastner agreed to the extermination of the people and abandoned them to their fate. Kastner, as I said there parenthetically, was head of the Aid and Rescue Jewish Aid and Rescue Committee. These were the people that the Jews turned to for help against the Nazis, the very person that betrayed him. Furthermore, after the war, Kastner spoke very positively in behalf of Becker, the fellow that Kurt Becker, an SS officer, who was involved with the deportation of the Jews. And it's because of that Becker was not sentenced to death or tried in the Nuremberg trials. And Benjamin Halevi did in his hearing, in his judgment, he found that Kastner openly and willingly collaborated with them in a contract. And his decision is very contractarian, like this was a business arrangement. And his evidence is quite strong. It's a very powerful and very persuasive judgment. Problem is, this presented a problem for the state of Israel. Because if you have someone like Kastner convicted of collusion, well then, you have a problem of, well, how many other Jews did? What does that say about the Jews of Hitler's Germany? What does it say about Israel? Is Israel a country of collaborators, of Nazi collaborators? And frankly, the answer was yes. That is essentially what it was. Because the appeals court overturned Halevi's decision. And Agranat, who was one of the judges, stated, quote, "The change was important, that is to say, the change in decision, because Halevi's judgment seemed to imply a seamless transition between the world of Kastner and occupied Budapest and that in Israel of the 1950s. And that is precisely why Benjamin Halevi's initial decision was quite correct. Because of the power of Kastner as a member of the Mapai Party, and he was a member on to be elected to the Knesset, he could not be charged, he could not be considered to be such an odious person. Because later it was said the need for the cover-up was necessary because of the very fact that the court was not the appropriate forum to examine these charges, the appeals court said. They wanted to take the issue out of the courts. They wanted to bury it. They wanted to hide it. Not because Kastner was innocent, but because he was guilty. And Kastner's guilt could not publicly be admitted. So the appeal, which was essentially a whitewash of a legitimate court decision, forms the basis of this new book. It's by Anna Porter, a Canadian authoress, who has quite a good pedigree of being an author and has a lot of awards and plaudits to her name. She wrote a book called Kastner's Train, which whitewashes Kastner's crimes, takes up the appeals court decision, and essentially calls this man, if you can believe it, the Hungarian Schindler, a hero of the Jews of Hungary. The book is itself, based on what I've seen, an utter whitewash, a sham, a fraud. Inasmuch as she is correct that Kastner was responsible for getting 1,684 Jews out of Hungary, these are, as Benjamin Halevi said, the prominent Jews. These were the Zionist Jews, friends and family of Kastner from his town of Cluj in Hungary. And we're to take at face value Anna Porter's contention that Kastner was a hero to the Jews because of these few Jews that he brought out of Hungary. We don't hear from her the cost of the Jews, how many hundreds of thousands of Jews were sacrificed just so Kastner's buddies could get out. And this is what is the most disturbing and offensive piece of writing that has come out of Canada quite in recent history. But I want to bring up one interesting point, and that is why this story is even being told now. I mean, Kastner has been a notorious example of Zionist Nazi collaboration for decades. And it's part of the historical record. I mean, it's like trying to rewrite history. And if you look at precisely what state Israel is in today, it has no friends. It has only dependencies and sycophants. There has to be some way to reinvent Israel as a great haven for Jews, or some sort of virtuous state. And I suspect that this book was written for propaganda purposes, although I haven't yet been able to interview Porter to find out precisely why she wrote it. I do know she spoke with a man named Peter Munk, a Canadian billionaire who was head of Barrick Gold, and he was one of the people who was saved by Kastner. So I don't know to what degree Peter Munk's experiences colored her interpretation of matters, or whether she was even just put up to do this by Munk, in the same way that Joan Peters was put up to write the farcical from time immemorial, which was essentially a historically fraudulent book trying to argue that Palestine was not populated by Arabs when the Jews started invading in the 1920s. So I had to ask myself why this book was being written, and I tend to investigate this further in the next month or two to find out why such a fraudulent book would have been written. Because whatever you want to say about Kastner, even if you want to make an excuse for him, which would be tasteless, but I suppose you could do it, to call him a hero is an outright lie. That is a fraud. That is a disrespect of history, and a contempt of the memory of every Jew that was sacrificed so that Catherine could get his friends and family out of Hungary. This has to be seen as propaganda, and there's been nobody in the press that has gone after Porter for this. I tried to bring it to the attention of the head of the director of the Vancouver International Book Festival, which was recently held here in Vancouver, and at which Porter had two speaking venues, but I did not hear back from him in time. So I don't know what, if anything, was done. I don't know what happened when she spoke, but I'm going to be finding this out as soon as possible, because there's a need to bring this out, because this book, by trying to deify or sanctify Kastner, is an outright sham. And this is the sort of thing you would expect from the Nazis, to rewrite history to make, you know, make the truth sound like a lie and make a lie sound like truth.
Hey, here's one for you, Greg. I wanted your reaction to this one in the last few minutes that we're on together this morning. Comes to us from Washington, D.C. on October the 19th. It's a news release of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee. I'll run it by you in the last couple of minutes of our chat this morning when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Hi, friends. Bill Bagley from Vital Basics, and I want to send you a bottle of the best-selling supplement Focus Factor absolutely free. Why would we give away a free bottle of Focus Factor? Because we know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Focus Factor has nutrients that work with your natural brain chemistry to support your memory, concentration, and focus. People all over the country say it's the best brain support supplement they've ever tried. Well, how would you like to try Focus Factor yourself absolutely free? No, we're not crazy. We're confident. Because once you try Focus Factor, you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. And that's why, for a limited time, we'll give you a full-size bottle of Focus Factor, an $85 value, free. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover the cost of shipping and handling. Call now for your free bottle of Focus Factor. Call 1-800-518-3796. That's 1-800-518-3796. Limit one bottle per household, please. Again, the number is 1-800-518-3796.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce up to 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year. It is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner on RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Joke, I like to buy the world a token, teach the world to sing.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the last couple of minutes of our conversation with Greg Felton, who hooks up with us today from Vancouver. Greg is the author of The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. Greg, the Arab-American Anti-Discrimination Committee, which people can find at adc.org, has a news release of October the 19th talking about something called Islamofascism Awareness Week. And in that regard, this Islamofascism Awareness Week, according to the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, is spreading hate and fear of Arabs and Islam by spreading false, hateful, and biased messages, quote-unquote. And when you look at this list of speakers, the Islamofascism Awareness Week organizers apparently are asking students to participate in a campaign to disseminate presentations such as, quote, the Islamic Mein Kampf, unquote. They also try to connect Islam with fascism and Arabs and Muslims with Nazis. In his blog, David Horowitz, the director of this Islamofascist initiative, proclaims that Palestinians are the, quote, quintessential Islamofascists, unquote, and that their cause is, quote, unquote, genocidal. What's your reaction to this?
Disgust and hatred. This is so disgusting. This is what the Nazis did to the Jews. They demonized them. They turned them into unpersons. They treated them like subhumans. The term Islamofascism is a nonsense term because it's utterly perverse, because there's no connection of fascism to Islam. That's outrightly, that's a libel. But because you have to demonize Arabs for Israel, you have to concoct sophistries. And this is one of the great lies that the Zionist lobby is hoisting on us. It's disgusting. It's a fraud. And it should be denounced as hate speech. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm getting some feedback at my end.
Yes, I am too.
Now, it is disgusting. It's fraudulent, and David Horowitz should be charged with libel. He should be charged with disseminating hatred and fomenting violence against Arabs. It's corrupt. It's dishonest. It's fraudulent. Palestinians are the victims of genocide. They are being killed systematically by Zionist Jews who want them dead or out of the country. And Horowitz is a liar. He's a fraud.
Well, I found myself in reading Horowitz's utilization of the word genocidal. It seemed to me to be a classic Orwellian twist in terms of who the perpetrators are and who the victims are.
Perfect. It's exactly right. It's a standard lie by turning truth on its head. I mean, you can never admit that Israel is committing genocide, and even though the proof is obvious, you have to foist the lie on the people loudly enough and longly enough that they believe it. And now we're indoctrinating children with the lie that Arabs are dangerous, that Muslims are dangerous, and they're not. And if there's any... See, this is why I come to the conclusion that the United States is Israeli-occupied territory, because why would Americans put up with such disgusting behavior from Zionist Jews unless the Zionist Jews were in such control that they could control what they did, and they could sabotage any attempts at imposing at having them obey the law that applies to everyone else. It's revolting. And
as they did last week at the No More Wars for Israel conference in Irvine, Southern California. Greg Felton, I'd like to thank you for being on Mark Dankos America today. We're signing off now live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'll be joined tomorrow by Dr. Adrian Krieg, and we'll look forward to talking to Greg Felton 1 week from today. God bless you. See you in the morning, 7 a.m. sharp Central Time.
With recent